The Crossover Podcast is going on tour. Next month, we are launching live shows in four NBA cities. October 2nd, we'll be at The Harp in Boston. October 3rd, at The Draft House in D.C. October 4th, at the 4040 Club inside the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And October 7th, at the Improv Theater in Philadelphia. Wizards GM Tommy Shepard is going to join us in D.C., and we will have a full guest list for each city announced very soon. Links to buy tickets for each show are available on my social media channels. That's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and online at the venue locations.
This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. Glad you could join me this week. Great show lined up for you this week. And we begin with a bit of a roundtable. I was out in L.A. for most of the week at the Sergey Kovalev Canelo Alvarez press conference. Was there for most of the week talking to all the parties that are involved. Mike Coppinger, senior writer for The Athletic, he was out there as well. He joins me. And Sergio Mora, the former junior middleweight champion, also a broadcaster over DAZN, he sits down with us as well. We cover all the bases, everything going on in the world of boxing, from Canelo Kovalev to Tyson Fury's win this past weekend to Jaime Munguia, him moving up to 160 soon. What's that going to look like? And just how good is Devin Haney? He had another big win this past weekend. I get into that and more with Mike and Sergio. A little bit later on, Oscar De La Hoya, the chairman of Golden Boy Promotions, the former Olympic gold medalist, the Golden Boy, the Hall of Famer, he sits down, talks to me in my capacity as a broadcaster for DAZN. You can hear the audio here on the podcast. And Oscar and I cover a lot of bases. We talk about the making of Canelo versus Kovalev. We talk about the relationship between Oscar and his star pupil, Canelo Alvarez. And we get into a whole bunch of other topics that relate to Golden Boy Promotion. Stick around for that. It is a great conversation. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, Mike Coppinger is here, boxing insider, boxing writer from The Athletic. Also on the podcast this week, back the man that owes Abraham Hahn an apology, who ducked Jermaine Taylor, who gave Elvin Ayala a run for his money. Boy, that was a barn burner. The former junior middleweight champion, Sergio Mora. What's up, Sergio?
You had that lined up already.
I did. I came into this podcast prepared to just drill you.
And by the way, it's not Sergio. After Kovalev left, I want to be called Sergey Mora.
Sergey Mora. I think that's probably out.
The
Mike,
crusher.
Thanks for joining us again here, man. What's up?
Happy to be here.
This is just what we do with Sergio. This is on broadcast and off broadcast as well, the back and forth between the two of us. All right, so we're here in Los Angeles, where we are part of or participating in going to the press conference for Canelo Alvarez versus Sergey Kovalev. Canelo going up to 175 to challenge Kovalev for his piece of the light heavyweight title. Kovalev coming off a pretty tough fight on August 24th. He's got a quick turnaround back in the ring. Early thoughts on this fight, Mike. They put it together relatively quickly after that that Kovalev win against Anthony Yard. What do you think?
It's not the fight we wanted. I think everyone wanted Canelo Triple G3. But since we're not getting that, I love this fight. I think it's easy work for Canelo Alvarez and a real legacy fight because he's going to become a champion in four divisions if you really recognize that win over Rocky Fielding for that secondary title. But look, Kovalev is now 36. He's been knocked out a couple of times recently. And like you said, in real big trouble against Anthony Yard. He got hurt to the body in that fight. That's his biggest weakness. What's Canelo's biggest strength? Body punching. I think this is going to be a really big night for Canelo.
Sergio, Canelo's moving up those two weight classes, and Kovalev is a world champion coming off a win, but he's a significant underdog. 3-1, 4-1, maybe even 5-1 in some sports books. Who knows how high it's going to go? What do you think of Canelo being such a favorite in this one?
Well, numbers don't lie. They probably know something we don't. I mean, when we look at spreads in football, we always say, why is that? And then you realize why. So I give Kovalev some opportunity, some chance, because he's so big, it just takes one punch, and then that's when you get surprised. But I'm with Mike here. I think he's been softened up by Andre Ward, and the two fight. He, you know what? One thing, he's been fighting like an older fighter really well. He's fighting behind the jab a lot more. He's not as aggressive, and because he's never been much of a mover. But when you are a mover, when you start hitting your mid 30s, you start being more you sit down on your punches more. Not because you want to, because you have to. Erizalde Lara, Guillermo Rigondeaux, you become more exciting. Crusher's always been exciting, though. He's always crushed people, but now he's getting somewhat crushed and touched up. So that's what makes it exciting, and I think that's what Canelo's been seeing there. Anthony Yard had success in the seventh round. I watched that fight last night. It was a body shot that started his I wouldn't say onslaught, but the tide's turning for him. So the body shots are there, and I love saying this line, body shots have a good memory. They don't forget, and that's what I think Canelo Alvarez and his team see.
Can you get better at defending the body shot or taking the body shot? Is that possible?
No. Like, no. You're born with a good chin. And the thing about the body, the older you get, for some reason, you can't take them anymore. I used to take great body shots, and I was getting hurt in sparring in my last three camps. And I had no way to escape it. Even when I blocked it, my elbow dug into my own liver. Mm-hmm. And I'm serious. And it will still hurt. So that's when I realized, like, wow, this ain't going to last too much longer.
Can you see, Mike, like a path to victory for Kovalev in a fight like this?
It would really shock me. I'd make the odds even bigger than 4-1 just because I think Canelo's, you know, perhaps top three pound for pound. You can make a case that he's number one and it wouldn't bother me.
I make that case often because at some point you can look at raw talent, but you have to look at resume, right?
Like, absolutely.
You have to look at a guy's resume. And Canelo consistently fights the best, and you can argue the first Golovkin fight, but consistently beats the best. And, you know, Lomachenko, great, but the signature wins are more on the Canelo side of the ledger.
Yeah, personally, I have the monster from Japan, Inoue, number one, and Canelo, number two. Mm. But I have Canelo in front of Terence Crawford, in front of Lomachenko, like you said, better resume, moves through the weight classes seamlessly, it seems. His power always seems to carry. And I see a lot of people saying, oh, Canelo is so much shorter than Kovalev. Well, yeah, he is shorter, but he's a stocky guy like Mike Tyson who has broad shoulders. We just saw him over here. He's a big, kind of a big guy. I think he's going to fill out really well at 75. Kovalev's only real chance, I love Kovalev's jab. It's excellent. He did a good job controlling Yard with the jab. But like Sergio said, he can't take it to the body. And they always say, what you put in your body really would affect how you take it there into the midsection. Kovalev is always drinking still to this day. He doesn't take care of himself between fights. So maybe the quick turnaround will help. But also, he was in real big trouble. A couple of punches from being knocked out at 36. I think he softened up big time.
Sergio, what do you think of the turnaround? That's another aspect of all this. Fights on August 24th, now fights again on November 2nd, effectively going right back into camp after a few weeks off. Is that good for him, bad for him, not a factor at all? How do you see it?
Back to what Mike said, now I know I can't take body shots. Yeah, the it's the vodka, Nastrovia.
It's your Mexican. What are you talking about?
Tequila. No. But look, you can't take not only body shots, but you can't take punishment once you start hitting your mid-30s. That's just the way it is. It's Father Time. It's undefeated. And that's what's happened with Kovalev. Not only the fast living, not only, you know, everyone knows that he liked to you know, have his vodka and drink and live hard and train hard. And I'll be honest with you, a lot of fighters do that way, live that lifestyle. I mean, it's very few. You get Mayweathers and Bernard Hopkins and Andre Wards. Very, very few. So I think the fast living, he burned the candle at both ends, and now he's trying to remedy everything and live that clean lifestyle. But I would say it's a little bit too late. He barely got away with it with Yard. He didn't get away with it with Eliadere Alvarez the first time. But he's still a Hall of Fame great fighter, and great fighters know how to turn it around. They know.
But the turnaround, like the coming back so quickly, like devil's advocate, Andy Ruiz.
I was about to get to that.
Andy Ruiz, I'll just tee up a little bit here. Andy Ruiz benefited greatly from going into the camp for Dimitrenko then straight into the AJ fight. Apples and oranges, like Andy Ruiz, a younger guy certainly, but he benefited. Could Kovalev benefit?
It is apples and oranges. Ruiz is in his late 20s, and you got Alvarez who's in his mid to late 30s. That's the big difference. The body needs to recover. When you're younger, and here's another thing, it was a physical fight. If it wasn't a physical fight, if it was a quick knockout, then I wouldn't say much. But to go from camp to back-to-back camps, that's the hardship on the body. It's the body, you know, recovering from all that. The fight itself, okay, he had a difficult fight, that's fine. But the camp to prepare for that those 36 minutes of fighting, that's what breaks down your body. So it's not really fights. It's the camps preparing you for the fights that really beat you up.
Mike, the other side of it is that Kovalev is still a powerful guy. Like, he still can throw, and that's always the last thing to go in fighters. We've seen it time and again that their punch is still there. Is that, do you think that's a variable in a fight like this, or has Canelo proven that his chin is sturdy enough to take even the biggest Kovalev shot?
There's certainly danger in this fight for Canelo, a guy who started his career below 154 and won his first title there, but he has one of, if not the best chin in boxing. I mean, we saw him just shrug off massive punches that landed flush with Golovkin. And what I love about Canelo is he knows how to ride a punch greatly. The same way Mayweather did it, the same way Hopkins does it. He's actually a really good defensive fighter. I don't see people talk about that enough. And I just think that for him to get really hit by Kovalev, to get knocked out, he would have to lose focus, and he's one of the most focused fighters we see. Mm. I just would be very surprised.
The maturation of Canelo has been remarkable. Like, he used to be a guy, Sergio, that didn't cut the ring off, kind of followed guys around, you know, wasn't very good at that. The chin, I don't know if you want to call it suspect, when was it Jose Miguel Cotto knocked him down early in his career, but he took Golovkin's best shot, as Mike said, you know, took jab after jab to the forehead and kept coming. I think he'll take it, but I think he's got to be careful. He wants to get on the inside. That's how he's going to win this fight. If it's a fight at a distance, that's Kovalev's best shot, because Kovalev loves to fight at distance where he can just throw that jab out there and follow it up with the right hand. But if he fights on the inside, I think he's going to break Kovalev down.
He'll have to get on the inside. I just don't see Kovalev wanting to get inside. He's going to want to try to fight on the outside, of course. But like I said earlier, he's not a boxer. He's never used his legs. He's always been the one doing the crushing. Now he needs to beware to get crushed by a younger, stronger fighter that just explosive, probably the most explosive combination puncher in boxing, pound for pound. So he needs to keep that young man away from him, that young bull away from him. It's going to be very hard. He will get hurt, and I think probably both of them will get hurt. I just don't see Canelo going 12 rounds without getting hurt with a big puncher like 175. He probably won't go down, but he'll get hurt. Mm-hmm. Both of them are going to have to face adversity. And that body shot, man, it makes cowards of us all. I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. You can take a big shot upstairs. That body will not forgive you. I just don't see Kovalev going 12 rounds with that those explosive body punching.
So we get Canelo Kovalev, and we're kind of back in a situation where we were 3 or 4 months ago, where we have Golovkin fighting on one date, Canelo fighting shortly thereafter. It was reversed the last time with Canelo in May and Golovkin in June. But October 5th, Golovkin's back at the Garden fighting for a piece of the 160-pound title against Derevchenko. Canelo about a month later. You get mixed responses when you talk to people about the possibility that this fight could happen, a third fight between Canelo and Golovkin. You've got DAZN obviously wants that fight to happen. I think Golden Boy wants that fight to happen. Oscar De La Hoya told me this week that Golovkin will be a Canelo opponent in 2020. But Canelo was just in here sitting with me, and when I asked him, you know, why he didn't want to fight Golovkin, he said the guy has nothing to offer. And I didn't get the sense that it was going to change. You know, I said, so never against Golovkin. He goes, never say never, but, you know, right now, nothing to offer there. So what do we think of that? Do we think, Mike, that we're never going to get the third fight between these two guys?
I mean, they've already fought twice. We've seen many, many rematches over the years fall by the wayside that we thought would certainly happen. There was even talks of Mayweather, De La Hoya, too. There was, you know, Pacquiao versus De La Hoya again. There's just so many. Actually, I don't know what I'm talking about there. I don't think that was ever a possibility.
No, that was the end of Oscar at that point.
That was the end of Oscar. Mm. But it's just, I would not be surprised if it didn't happen again. And Canelo really just despises Golovkin. These guys hate each other. And Canelo doesn't see it as, I want to punish Golovkin in another fight. He sees it as, I want to deny him the chance of revenge, deny him a way bigger pay than he could already get. He needs somebody powerful on his side to be like, look, it doesn't matter how much money Golovkin makes. This is another legacy fight for you. Someone needs to get through to Canelo, because he probably would win this third fight even more clear, I think. And it would be good for him.
Yeah, I mean, Sergio, I think it loses some, even if it happens next year, it's lost a little bit of luster already. I mean, Golovkin is closer to 40 than he is to 35 at this point. I mean, what do you make of Canelo's just, you know, determination not to fight him?
I agree 100% with Mike. It's a power move right there by Canelo. He already gave you the first one. It was a great fight. He took a lot of shit for it, can I say?
Yeah, we can. No problem. Good. Yeah,
love that.
You're good.
All right, so he took a lot of shit for it in the first time. The second time around, I thought he won convincingly, and he still had his critics kind of shit on him again. But so he got tired of that. He got tired of, okay, I proved you guys wrong. I did it twice. That's 24 rounds, and you guys still aren't happy. So now I'm going to go off and make a boatload of money. So now I'm cussing. A boatload of money. And why am I going to give you the trilogy? I'll do it when I want to and if I want to. I mean, look at how long it took for Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran to have a trilogy. That's where we're headed. Mm-hmm. The first one was great, and then the other one took part, what, 3-4 months later? I forget. But the third one, it took years, and then no one even remembers that trilogy. We're headed in the same direction.
That's true. The other layer to all this is Canelo's relationship with Golden Boy. Oscar De La Hoya says, remain calm, all is well, you know, channeling his movie character. But, you know, you talk to Canelo, and Canelo doesn't really want to talk about, you know, Golden Boy and everything that's gone on over the last few months. There sure seems, Mike, like there is legitimate friction between Canelo and Golden Boy.
I would say that's putting it mildly, Chris. Canelo, from what I told, just doesn't talk to Eric Gomez, Robert Diaz, or Oscar De La Hoya at all anymore. Instead, going through a lawyer who's an intermediary. He is great, very good friends with Ryan Garcia, so the relationship was already sour. And then we have Oscar and Eric pretty much going on the offensive against Ryan Garcia, who's kind of Canelo's protege. NBC Canelo retweeting everything that Ryan Garcia says about Golden Boy. I don't understand why they're going at Ryan Garcia. Even if they do feel that way, just take care of it behind the scenes. Canelo is under contract, but he's not happy with Golden Boy right now, and I think it's going to be interesting to see if they can repair this relationship.
Sergio, how much credit do you give Golden Boy for building Canelo into what he is? They got him as a young star with a glossy resume, but, you know, they put him on the Mayweather undercards and, you know, help build him up until this point. I mean, how much credit do you give to them?
I give Canelo more credit, but they had the stage. They owned the stage, and you had the superstar come dance on it. So who has the talent? Canelo, but who owns the stage? So ultimately, they had some part to do with it. Canelo did all the fighting, and he is the one that was already a star in Mexico. I mean, even before he fought on my undercard versus Shane Mosley, by the way, people know who he was. They already knew who he was. I knew who he was. I heard of him, Canelo. Everyone, and then they got a taste of what he can do against, you know, Carlos Baldomir back then. And then he kept passing every single test after that. So Canelo, I think he's the star attraction. And at this point, it's time for the promoter to realize that. Back then, the promoter held all the marbles, and I think now we know who the big shot is. But see, here's another thing. Here's a trivia question for you, Mannix. You tell me a fighter that has stuck with the same promoter from beginning to end, at the beginning of their career to the end of their career. It's just going to be rare, because there's going to be a power struggle there of the same question we're asking ourselves now. Did you build me, or did I build myself? That, like the classic Jay-Z line, you know, you think you can build another one of me? Do it again. He didn't do it like that. He said it more cool. But you think you can make another Canelo Alvarez? Make another Canelo Alvarez.
Well, Al Haymon, they stick with him, don't they?
They stick with Al.
We love Al.
Well, that's a separate topic altogether. Mike, you listen to Bob Arum, and Bob praises Canelo more than he praises his own fighters. Like, on multiple occasions, Bob has called Canelo the face of boxing, the best, you know. Littering comments or praise on him. What do you make of that? I mean, it's pretty clear to me that other promoters are circling, hoping that they can poach Canelo from Golden Boy.
I love it. Bob is the best. He's 87 years old, and when he sees an opening, he's not afraid to jump right in there. I remember the three of us were in Dallas for that Maurice Hooker-Jose Ramirez fight, and like you said, Bob was, you know, going on, Canelo, the WBC franchise champion, this is so great, he deserves it, and just talking about him more than he talks about his own fighters. And we saw Oscar's not happy about that, because on your interview with Oscar on Saturday, Oscar started swiping at Bob over Terrence Crawford. They know what he's doing, and it's smart, though. Canelo's unhappy. He has a contract, though. Will he try to get out of it? Wouldn't be surprising. Fighters do this all the time, like Sergio said. But Canelo, there is only one face of boxing right now, and that's Canelo Alvarez. And yes, the buzzards are hovering right now.
Oscar De La Hoya got out of his Top Rank contract and started his own promotional company. I mean, that's just how it goes. Floyd Mayweather did the same. Miguel Cotto did the same. I mean, that's just that we learn the business. We realize, and by we mean fighters. We understand that, okay, I got big enough to where I know what to do now. I know how to pull my own strings. I already seen what it takes to do all this. And you get the right people on your team. You have the money to back you. Go ahead and do it. Now you have Twitter and social media to promote yourself. Mm-hmm. There you go.
And to add on to that, if you're Canelo, you've got the, you're locked in money wise. Like you're good. Like you don't, right. you know, you don't need a promoter necessarily to, or to pay them or to boost you up because you know what you're going to get. And Canelo's never been the most media friendly guy. Like he doesn't invite people into his training camps all that often. I mean, he just kind of wants to go about his business, you know, fight big fights, train for them, and then, you know, recede into the background. He doesn't want to be the most visible guy in the world.
But is that him or is that Golden Boy? Hard to say. Yeah. Also, we, you know, you and I don't speak Spanish.
True.
So that's, I never really can get through to guys why I don't speak the same language. I don't want to say that, you know.
Canelo like, understands like every word someone says to him. Like he, during the interview.
He's like Roberto Duran. He understands, but he'll pretend he can't speak English.
Yeah, correct. I just don't think he's comfortable speaking English on a level like that, which is, you know, interesting only because imagine the star he'd be if he did. Like Manny Pacquiao's English is not great, but it was enough to get him on Jimmy Kimmel all those times and help promote
him.
Same
thing with Chavez. He never wanted to really learn because that's what made him such a prize.
Hey, to each their own. I mean, if you're, you know, making, you're cashing $30+ million checks to fight whoever you want, then, you know, more power to you there. It'll be interesting to watch how that plays out in the next couple of years because I'm with you guys. I think there's legitimate friction there and some bad blood.
Now I'm thinking of Jay-Z lines with Canelo.
Okay. Right,
he's not a businessman. He's a businessman. Let him handle his business.
Damn. It's like you're having like a podcast production meeting in the middle of the podcast.
Sorry.
All right, let's talk about Tyson Fury. Mike, you were there Saturday in Las Vegas. Tyson Fury wins his second fight in a row on this new ESPN Top Rank deal. Tougher than the first time, though. Tom Schwartz, a few months back, that was a blowout. This one was, you know, neck and neck, you know, all throughout. I mean, he had the cut early in the fight. That cut could have caused the stop of the fight at any time, at which point it would have gone to Otto Vailin, who caused the cut with a punch. What did you think of Fury's performance?
I thought it was a really close fight. I know the scorecards were, of course, wide. We're in Vegas. They know that Deontay Wilder's down the pipeline in Vegas next year, so they're not going to mess that up. I had it 7-5 for Tyson Fury, 115, 113. I was just talking to Deontay Wilder before I stepped in here, and he said that he thought that Zarvuelin should have went for the knockout in round 12. He thought that Fury was way more hurt than he let on, and that Vuelin should have jumped on the opportunity there. And Wilder said that he thinks when he fights Fury again, that it's all over, and that we've already seen the best of Fury. Maybe, as you know, we had Sergio talking before about how Kovalev was softened up by Andre Ward. Can we say now that Fury was softened up by Deontay Wilder? Those were two really hard knockdowns.
I think that that's certainly possible. I also think that it's much easier to get up for a Deontay Wilder fight than it is for Otto Vailin, especially when everybody's telling you you're going to blow this guy out and everybody's talking about Deontay Wilder. I think, and Wilder's, you know, Fury's style is tough for Wilder because he throws so many punches and he just keeps the activity going and he's got great head movement. He's not there to just get hit. All that being said, it wasn't a sharp performance by any stretch. We know that Tyson's father was not pleased with, you know, the corner and how they got it. I'm curious though, Sergio, you see that cut. Like, a lot of people wondered if any other fighter would Vegas have stopped that fight.
No.
I mean, that was a cut that required 50 stitches at
and
the
I'll
end.
And I'll tell you why, not on that level. It was two cuts. It was a huge gash and then it was a smaller one. I had the same experience. And I'm sorry, I keep interjecting myself, but at the Staples Center, I had a huge cut. It was somewhat, you know, similar to that ugly one, but Tyson, and another ugly one on the bottom of that. And the referee, it's all body language. When you go to the referee, if you seem like you can't see or you make it seem like you're struggling or you give them any kind of reason to stop the fight, the doctors will stop the fight. Now, if you do it with body language, if you do it like, no, I could see, and you say it confidently, they're going to give you an opportunity. Because the eye, for some reason, the eye is one of the, unless it's right on your eyelid and it's going to cause major damage. But if it's on top of the eyebrow or on the eyebrow, they'll let it continue as long as you have the cojones to keep fighting. I still want to fight. I can see through this. No, my corner's going to stop it. It's all about body language. And Fury gave off the good body language, and that's why they let it proceed. It wasn't all the Vegas talk. I just think it was the body language. In his corner, he's always confident. Fury's a showman, and that's why they let the show go on.
Mike, Fury elected not to go straight to a Wilder rematch by signing that deal with Top Rank. Do you think, now that the two fights have passed, was it worth it? Do you think he gained something from it? And do you think that fight is bigger because of Fury's decision to put it off?
We've seen in recent past the boxing that the longer you wait when you're so-called marinating fights, it does work. Mayweather-Pacquiao probably came 5 years later than we all wanted it, and it was 4.6 million buys. I'm confident that Wilder Fury, the second time around, could approach a million buys after doing a little in the neighborhood, I think, of between 3 and 4. I don't see any reason not. We have Fox now instead of Showtime. There's going to be a joint pay-per-view between ESPN and Fox for Wilder Fury 2. We have another fight for Wilder right now against Luis Ortiz, November 23rd in Las Vegas. And Wilder, like Fury, is a showman. Wilder's maybe the best talker in boxing right now. He's always willing to do interviews. I think the two of them together are going to have great synergy.
Is Showtime's getting frozen out of all this, aren't they? I mean, are they going to get any? Are they have anything to do with the November 23rd fight? Do we know that at this point?
My expectation is that Fox is going to televise that Wilder Ortiz fight November 23rd. I've heard that you know Heyman's gone to both sides and he's trying to get the most assets he can from a promotional standpoint, whether that's Fox commercials during NFL and college football or the same with CBS, which is Showtime's sister company. And it just looks like it's going to Fox. It makes the most sense for Al Heyman to put that fight on Fox, especially when you have Wilder Fury 2 as an ESPN Fox joint pay-per-view.
Well, especially too, if CBS is not going to get involved at a high level, I mean, CBS could match what Fox, you know, sure, does promotionally. There are more households, you know, they're even bigger than Fox in terms of the fire hose that they use with. But your guy there, Sergio Al, just making business
He's
moves out there.
He's not my guy. Just fighters love him. And by we, I mean fighters.
I mean, he is your guy. You're not retired.
Fighters that are with Al, they stay loyal because he stays loyal to them. We lose. He doesn't kick us to the curb like most promoters and most managers, most networks. He'll find a way to get you back to a big fight. And fighters, that's all we've done in our lives. Why are you going to kick us out once we have one bad performance? And he'll say no. We're gonna fix you up and put you back in there.
Is he gonna get you that fight with Spike O'Sullivan? Because I'm ready to promote that.
Why do you say Spike O'Sullivan?
I'm ready to promote that.
You guys can't wait to get me back in the
don't
ring.
Don't act like we didn't discuss this. Drinking.
No.
Spike O'Sullivan. Mora O'Sullivan. That's what I'm saying. My pitch is Mora O'Sullivan on the undercard of Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano. In New York.
I love it.
Yep, sold.
Show me the money.
That's what it's all about. We're right there. Show me the money. Let me finish up with the fight that we did this weekend, Sergio. Jaime Munguia comes back and blows out Patrick Elote. Not unexpected. I mean, Elote was a blown-up welterweight, really, you know, fighting a guy that is a legitimate 154 and close to 160 and probably will be at 160 in his next fight or the fight immediately after. So I don't know if we learned anything from that, Mike, but there are going to be a lot of people, a lot of fighters clamoring to face Jaime Munguia because he represents money, he has a television-friendly style, and his defense isn't great. He's there to get hit.
That's kind of you.
I mean, I'm trying to be political to a degree. But there are guys that are going to be clamoring for at 160. How do you think he fares at 160 pounds?
I don't see Jaime Munguia right now at this, 21, 22? I don't see him competing with anybody in the top 10 right now at middleweight. He's just a very limited fighter. And I'm not saying he can't improve, you know, over the years. I mean, Canelo was never as bad as he is right now, but the Canelo that fought Mayweather or Jose Cotto even is way different than the Canelo now. So if I'm Golden Boy and Zanfer, I'm feeding Jaime Munguia a steady diet of guys like the guy he fought on Saturday, Patrick Alote, because there's no rush with him. He's obviously a big draw in Mexico, has a fan-friendly style, and he has no defense whatsoever, and he's just so slow, it's like he's punching in quicksand.
Yeah, Sergio, there could be an opportunity, though, next May, if Canelo doesn't fight Golovkin. There aren't a lot of natural opponents. I don't think he's going to fight Demetrius Andrade at that point, but we could see him as a legitimate candidate to fight Canelo in May. Would you, if you're Munguia, do you roll the dice and go into that fight, or is it too big a risk that your career could get derailed?
Roll the dice, baby, roll the dice. Look what Canelo did when they offered him Mayweather.
He did. But Mayweather was never going to hurt
career.
Him. Like Mayweather
he
was going
to
hurt him.
He lost. Canelo lost, and he came back and look at he's making all this money, and he's still a superstar. And it was just one little hiccup in his career. Same thing could happen for Munguia. I mean, he's just as young as Canelo was back then. And yes, he is limited. He reminds me of a lot of fighters and a lot of Mexican fighters. Antonio Margarito. Antonio Margarito was limited. It's just he took such a hard punch and he kept coming that he just beat you out of attrition of man, I can't hurt this guy. I'm going to keep coming forward. And Munguia has that, plus he has the size and he has the power. So if that chin, that youth, the heart, and the size is just coming at you after 12 rounds, I don't care how good you are. If you don't have the size, the mass and body to compete with him and hold him off and wrestle with him in the inside, then, yeah, he's going to keep blowing off guys like Elote. I kept saying Elote, which is corn on the cob in Spanish, by the way. Elote. and other guys. So he needs to get guys like Daniel Jacobs, like Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., guys with that can be big body bags.
Yeah, but you're not going to roll the dice.
Jacobs is the same as Julio Cesar Chavez?
No, that's why. That's what I was about to correct that.
Okay.
You're not going to roll the dice on Jacobs, though, because it's not of money in it. Like, that's the thing, no. Mike. Do you roll, if you're Munguia and it's offered to you, do you take it? Canelo?
Danny Jacobs?
No, Canelo.
Oh, Canelo.
Canelo.
I would not at this point.
Really?
I think Munguia, like Sergio said, I think Antonio Margarito is a perfect example of the kind of fighter he could be if all goes according to plan. That's a best case scenario for him. And he's not close to being there right now, but there is the potential. Give him a couple of years. Why not? We've seen plenty of fighters grow up as prospects on the big stage. Keep feeding him these DAZN dates. Let him get better. And maybe in a couple of years, you know, he can fight a guy like a Canelo or even a Danny Jacobs.
Keep feeding him smaller fighters, or you can keep feeding him.
But there's no point to that. Like, don't feed him world beaters or killers in the ring, but feed him guys that are big.
You know,
like, he's going to have to start fighting bigger
guys. You should feed him good-looking, former champion Mexican-American boxers.
What about David Lemieux?
No, hold on. This is Sergio's way of saying he'll take the fight. Like,
show me the money.
He'll take the money. You'll take Didn't you tell me you would reject Jaime Munguia like 2 days ago?
Listen, I'm taking a page out of Bernard Hopkins. I'm somehow, some way, I'm going to interject myself into the conversation.
I'm with you, though, Mike.
So I'll keep myself alive.
I'm with you in the sense that if he put it off for a year and fought like four times in 2020, that fight with Canelo could be there in 2021, you know, and it'd be even bigger if Munguia is like 4-0 and he beats some kind of gatekeeper at the end of, you know, 2020 to set it up for that. It could be, that's a massive fight in 2021. I think it's still in 2020. It sells out an arena in Vegas because Canelo sells it, but you get the Mexicans and all that. But in 2021, it's just such a bigger fight, like just way up there.
It could be a massive fight. Munguia, for some reason, like I said, again, we don't speak Spanish, but he seems to connect with fans. He has a telegenic fighting style, and he's just not there yet. Just keep – I mean, look, when I heard good-looking former champion, before he said Mexican-American, David Lemieux.
Yeah.
David Lemieux, that's a great fight.
That's another one, but he's a former champion.
David Lemieux is not making 160 again, though.
No, he is not.
And plus, you can't even roll the dice and say –
and even if he did get a former champion in Jesse Vargas, then we're going to resort to – yeah, but Vargas is a blown-up 147-pounder. You know, he's coming up in weight. And then when they face in the middle of the ring, you're going to see the size difference. You need a body in front of him, someone that's just as massive and big.
Mm. Where does Demetrius Andrade fit in all this? I kind of feel bad for him at this point. I mean, he's just out there. I'd like to see him, and I've said this to him, I'd like to see him go for, you know, knockouts more. I thought there was an opportunity missed in that Seletsky fight where he had him
for the knockout
in the first round.
In the first couple of rounds,
first round
he went for it.
He stopped after
that.
He
stopped after that.
And his father in the corner said, "That's not our type of fight." I mean, what are we talking about? Not your type of fight.
You can't go for a knockout for 12 straight rounds. You get it when the opportunity shows itself.
How about you go for it for four?
I'm with Chris.
I think he gave it 2.5 good rounds to try to stop him.
One. First round, and he had him on the ropes. He was throwing haymakers. He couldn't, like, Seletsky couldn't see that left hand coming, and he came out in the second round and fought a tactical fight. Yep. Look, it's not us in the ring. As you know, it's easy to sit in the outside and say, go for a knockout, take a few punches to throw your big shot. But if he had knocked out Seletsky in the second round, he would have been a much stronger candidate to face Canelo.
Yes, stronger candidate, but he still wouldn't have got the fight because he's that good.
He'd be a bigger star, though.
Demetrius Andrade at middleweight, what, three fights now? Four fights? I haven't been that impressed with him. I was way more impressed at 154 when he was fighting guys like Vonis Martirosyan. At 160, we had a guy in Calton Dacqua who nobody has heard of before or since. He dropped him, what, four times? And again, didn't step on the gas. Was happy to go 12 rounds and went on points. Seletsky, same thing. Like Chris said, I'm with him. First round, went hard. Looked great in first round. After that, I was falling asleep. I had to keep waking myself up on the couch because I watched on a replay. And I think there was a fight the same night that I was at. And it's just the same thing over and over with Andrade. It's rinse and repeat, jab, jab, jab. Look, like Chris said, we're not in the ring. I'm not going to dog a guy for his style. I appreciate his skills. But I don't see him really putting on these masterclass performances that we think he's capable of.
Did Demetrius Andrade retire Walter Carlton Dacqua?
I hope he did.
Did he end Walter's career?
Carlton Dacqua got that DAZN money. That's what happened.
He got paid for a world title fight, come over from Africa and take a big challenge. Real quick, are we all three members of the Devin Haney bandwagon? Are we all now?
I'm driving it.
Firmly on the Devin Haney. The real deal, right?
No, he's serious, man. You get hints of Sugar Ray Leonard and Floyd Mayweather in there, but he's doing it his own. And he has a great team behind him. And you know, I'm not a big fan of fathers in your corner, but if you're gonna have anyone in your corner that's your father, it's Bill Haney, man. I mean, he lets them be a man. And the reason I'm not a big fan of fathers and sons as a team, because they're too close, and the fighter can never grow up to be his own man. They always feel like they're in the shadow of the father, or they're never good enough, or they're getting scolded. They're never their own man, especially when they start making millions of dollars and they're champions and they're getting that respect, but yet you're still getting scolded by your father. Never works. Bill Haney's a different type of father, and it's going to work, and it's working, and he's a superstar, Devin Haney.
Mike, I think you tweeted out future pound-for-pound king, you know, with Devin Haney after that last fight. So you're a big believer.
Yeah, I love Devin Haney. He's a really nice kid. He gives great interviews. He's already so mature, and he's only 20 years old. I know it sounds like a lazy comparison with Floyd Mayweather because they're two black fighters and good-looking guys, but that's what he looks like. It's the fighting style, too. I mean, this kid's been in Mayweather gym since he's 7 or 8 years old. He has the shoulder roll. We see that nice jab to the body. He switches levels really well, and I don't see any flaws in his game. Once he gets his man strength, he's going to be a serious problem, and I think he's a problem for Lomachenko right now today. Although there's no rush at all. I know Eddie's talking about it.
No chance that they ever
No chance
meet.
Whatsoever.
You'll never see Devin Haney throwing out money at strip clubs, though.
No, you won't.
Okay.
He's 20. Who knows what he's like? What were you at 20? Well, you were doing like...
I was throwing out money at strip clubs.
Backyard barbecue fights or something. I don't know what you were doing at that point. No, I'm with you. I see very few flaws in his game. He's powerful. He's excellent defensively. He's lightning quick in terms of jumping back. You know, I always want to see what it looks like against guys that'll punch back. I don't think Abdullayev brought anything to the table in that fight, but I'm not sure who that is. And you know, you look around that 135 pound weight class for the guys under 25. You know, I think he's better than Teofimo Lopez. Yes. I think he's better than Ryan Garcia. A fight I'd love to see down
Virgil
the line.
Ortiz
That's
Jr.
the fight I want to see
I
down the
know.
Line. I'm also driving the Virgil Ortiz bandwagon.
Me too.
I am
Me too.
Like
I won't go as far as say Devin Haney's better than him. I think they're so mutually even right now at
I just like
brink of being
that's the kind of fight
great.
I want to see. Like as Devin moves up, and he's probably only like a year away from being 140, and you know, Ortiz just went to 147. Like that's a major like Texas fight that could do a huge crowd.
You know, it's another fight that would never happen. But Tank Davis is moving up to 135. Yeah. We know that Devin Haney's, like you said, is going to go to 140 soon enough. It'll never ever happen, but that would be an amazing fight.
Yeah, I love Tank Davis too. Tank Davis, you know, the reception he got that Ravens game was awesome. Like the whole crowd knowing who he was and acknowledging him on the field. What bothers me, though, about Davis is that they continue to talk about the Mayweather track, but he doesn't have those early career Mayweather wins. I mean, before Mayweather became Money Mayweather, he was knocking out Castillo, or no, not beating Castillo, knocking out Corrales, and then Gennaro Hernandez. Like, he had 3, 4, 5 signature wins before he got to Oscar De La Hoya.
Corrales was the one.
That was one of the best fights. That was probably the best fight
best
he ever had.
Ones
I think it's the best one he ever had. I think it's the best win of his career. You know, Davis doesn't have that, and I'm not sure, like, do you think that Top Rank and Al Haymon, PBC, would get together on a joint pay-per-view for that, for Lomachenko against Davis in 2020?
I could definitely see that one happening. I think it's going to be more up to the Mayweather side if they want to do it. But I know that they're very confident right now that Tank Davis has what it takes to beat Lomachenko. When you talk to Top Rank, like you said, they keep saying back to 130 for Lomachenko, which I agree with. Lomachenko is really pushing the limits of his size at 135. And frankly, I don't think he's any longer in his physical prime. He's by no means faded, but guy with about 400 amateur fights, another bunch of fights in the World Series of Boxing. I don't think he's at the pinnacle of his powers any longer.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see that fight with Lomachenko and Davis. I mean, Lomachenko going back to 130, I'm not sure what's there for him at this point. I mean, I guess if Tevin Farmer picks up a couple of titles, maybe,
I'm not on a Tevin Farmer train like you.
I mean, no, I think Tevin in select fights is okay. Like, Tevin, JoJo Diaz, if that comes together,
nice fight.
I can do that. Do it in Philadelphia. You know, JoJo will make it a fight. But the whole stay active thing, I don't care. Like, it doesn't do anything for me. Mike, Sergio, or Sergey, what do you
mean? Sergey Mora.
Sergey Mora. Okay. Thanks for joining me, fellas. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
You got it.
All right, stop what you're doing and look down at your left wrist, because our friends at Movement Watches have exactly what you're missing. Movement has you covered with tons of quality, clean, and all-around good-looking watches and accessories that we can actually afford and order right from our couch. Do your wrist and wallet a favor. Go check out their minimalist designs that you can have with no risk, because they offer free shipping and returns. With over 2 million watches sold worldwide, Movement has solidified themselves as one of the fastest growing watch brands out there. I've been wearing the new Odyssey collection, and I really love how it's super clean and minimal, but it also has this unique hexagonal shape. They have tons of sunglasses and offer interchangeable watch straps, so you never run out of options for a new look. Movement watches start at just $95, so you're guaranteed to find something you love that won't break your bank. These guys are truly a ground-up entrepreneur success story. They understand living on a tight budget because they lived it too. And that's why they want to make a quality product that is accessible to everyone. They've sold over 2 million watches across more than 160 countries, and their collections are always expanding for you. Here's how you get a great deal. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/Mannix. mvmt.com/Mannix. See why Movement keeps growing. Check out their expanding collection. Go to mvmt.com/Mannix. Join the movement. All right, we're with Oscar De La Hoya, chairman, Golden Boy Promotions, promoting the big fight. November 2nd, mm-hmm. Canelo Alvarez moving up two weight classes to 175 pounds to take on Sergey Kovalev. Oscar, right. How are you feeling about this fight?
I feel excited. Excited more than ever for this fight because the historical factor that's involved. Mm-hmm. Canelo moving up two weight divisions is unheard of these days. As you know, a lot of these fighters don't want to take big risks. They don't want to challenge other champions. They don't want to unify, yet alone jump up two weight divisions up to light heavyweight and challenge Kovalev, who is obviously, as we saw in his last fight, still has that crushing power to knock you out even with a jab. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I think this fight has the ingredients to be a fight of the year candidate.
Canelo seems like for the last couple of months, like he's been zeroed in on Sergey Kovalev.
Right.
That this was specifically the fight that he wanted. What do you think it is about Kovalev that he sees?
Kovalev is a stationary fighter. He's not so elusive. He's not a Daniel Jacobs, where he has to chase around the ring. He's not a fighter like an Andrade, who knows how to move side to side and bend his waist and, you know, make these fights tricky for you. I think Kovalev will be right in front of Canelo. Therefore, Canelo can maybe, let go of his hands a little more. Will hopefully be able to see more of his punching power, his combinations. But don't underestimate Kovalev. I think he's a guy who is not your ordinary, typical fighter who just comes in and tries to knock you out. He can box. He can move around. He can move side to side and use his jab on you and use his distance. So, you know, Canelo has to be careful.
When you found out that he wanted to fight Kovalev, were you for it?
Absolutely. I was probably the only guy who was for it. Just the fact that I've been in the ring, the fact that I've always loved challenges myself, I instantly put a smile on my face and told Canelo, I mean, this is history. This is the fight that will solidify your legacy, or one of the fights. Obviously, he's not finished yet. He has a long ways to go, but this fight here will cement that legacy that every fighter desires.
These were intensely scrutinized negotiations for the last few months, almost at a Mayweather-Pacquiao level, where right. every detail seemed like it was being reported, and right. it seemed like there was some friction there from Canelo's to your side there. What do you think of everything that's transpired over the last few months?
Well, I mean, look, when negotiations are being dealt with and they're made public, it just makes it that much more difficult. Other promoters start to get involved. A lot of people want to derail those negotiations. They want to kill the fight, and then you have the. You have the public outcry from Canelo fans and from Kovalev fans, from Golden Boys fans. It just makes it that much more difficult. It was somewhat of a headache, but it was a lot of fun putting together. Mm. I think my president, Eric Gomez, did a wonderful job with Kathy Duva. You know, every time we would talk about a certain point, it wasn't just like an overnight response. It took weeks and sometimes even months to get something done. But it was a lot of fun. I think come fight night, people will realize how fun this fight is gonna be, and you know, I can't wait.
Is there anything you would do differently looking back over the last few months? I mean, Canelo did lose one of his titles. He seemed pretty frustrated by that. Would you do anything differently?
Well, look, I mean, I can say that, you know, we have a target on our back. That's the bottom line. When you're the biggest athlete in boxing, obviously people want to target you and maybe derail some of those plans that you might have. When you're the biggest promoter and promoting the biggest fighters, you know, a lot of people want to derail those plans as well. So we're going to continue doing our job. We do it best. We got this fight done. We have, just like any other fight that we've done in the past, and that we'll continue doing in the future, and just give the fight fans the best fights they can watch.
It probably comes as no surprise to you that other promoters believe that there's an opening there to poach Canelo from you at some point. How would you describe the relationship between you and Canelo?
No, we obviously have a solid contract and a solid relationship. It's just like any other marriage, you know, the you have your little hiccups here and there, but you, at the end of the day, you talk about it, you realize that, you know, what got us here and you move forward. That's exactly the same, you know, in this relationship, is that you realize, you know, who or what people got you here to this position, and that's exactly what Canelo realizes and recognizes, and you know, so do we. Canelo's the biggest star, and we helped him get there, and he recognizes that. So, like I said, I mean, we have a solid relationship, and we're going to continue it for till his career's over.
I think a lot of people are excited, of course, about Kovalev, but right. Everything kind of started down this path because Canelo did not want to fight Gennady Golovkin. And a lot of people don't really understand why. Do you understand why Canelo did not want a third fight with Golovkin as his next fight?
Yes, look, I mean, look, first of all, fighters have egos. You know, fighters, if I were to beat a fighter twice, why would I fight him a third time? That would be my mentality, because I should maybe move on to bigger and better things. But we have to recognize and realize that these fights were very close, and the public demand is so big that you can't pass it along. I mean, you have to have a third fight, and a trilogy is always great for your resume. And Canelo Alvarez knows that. It's just a matter of time. I think Triple G has to fight a couple times, win a world title, like hopefully he'll do coming up in October, and then maybe have a shot at Canelo. Mm-hmm. But he has to wait in line. He has to you know, start from the bottom and work his way up to the top. I believe that's Canelo's mentality, and it's not wrong.
It's been speculated that Canelo didn't want to fight Golovkin again because of Golovkin's reaction to his positive drug test last year. Do you believe that to be the case?
Well, it could be the case, but I think there are a lot of variables that came into play. You know, I mean, fighters have big egos. That's one of the main reasons.
But what does that mean then? Like, because I'm well, still
it,
a little.
It means like, for instance, you know, if Canelo knows that Golovkin's gonna get a big payday against him, then, and you're talking bad about me, why am I gonna give you that opportunity? Why am I gonna give you that chance to make all that money? I mean, just keep your mouth shut and wait for your turn. I'll give you your turn when I want to. And Canelo's in that position to call the shots because he has so many opponents that he can face. It's much easier for him to just say, look, I would rather just keep you in the back burner and let me fight Golovkin and make history here and maybe fight somebody else. And then maybe I'll think about you and fight you. Mm. In the meantime, just go fight your IBF title or somebody else. And then we might meet down the line.
Does it diminish at all a future fight that Golovkin is in his late 30s and every year that passes, people wonder, well, he's now outside of his prime. What if that fight happened? Canelo does have a win over Gennady. It was a close fight. It could have gone either way.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people believe Gennady won the first fight and look at it as almost a rubber match. If it gets pushed too far, does it not lose something?
I think so. I believe so. As a fighter and as a promoter, I mean, I would love to see that fight now. Why not? Mm-hmm. I think that Golovkin obviously is not the youngest fighter out there, but it all depends on him as well. Depends on his performance in his next fight. I mean, in boxing, you're as good as your last fight. Mm-hmm. And if Golovkin comes out strong and knocks out his opponent and wins the IBF title, then you can make an argument that he deserves another shot at Canelo. But then again, I mean, you have Canelo who's on top of the world, and again, he has many choices to choose from. So we'll see what happens.
Did that put you in a tough position because you're Canelo's promoter, but you're also a partner with DAZN? You're putting on big fights, and you know DAZN wanted that third fight in September between Golovkin and Canelo. What kind of position did that put you in?
Yes, no, it's a very difficult position to be in. It's one that I wouldn't even think of putting anybody in that position at all, because you have to please your fighter, you have to fulfill the obligations to your partners at DAZN, and it was very, very stressful, very difficult. But look, we got through it. We have a mega, mega fight with Golovkin with Kovalev. I strongly feel that this fight here with Kovalev is much, much bigger than a Gennady Golovkin. Just the fact that, you know, of the two weight divisions and going up and making history is going to be huge.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel the partnership with DAZN is going for Golden Boy, for everyone? How do you feel it's been in the first year?
It's incredible. I believe that DAZN has changed the way we obviously consume boxing. And it's just the beginning. I think that DAZN is doing a great job, a wonderful job, and it couldn't have come at a better time. Mm-hmm. I strongly feel that, look, the fact that DAZN has probably the best lineup in the fall for boxing is incredible. I mean, you have Anthony Joshua, Golovkin, Canelo, the biggest star. You have Munguia. You have Ryan Garcia. You have Ruiz with Joshua. That's an incredible lineup. I mean, it literally reminds me of when I signed with HBO, and I remember taking these pictures with all the champions around me, and you had Riddick Bowe, you had Pernell Whitaker, you had James Toney, and I was like, wow, HBO is like the real powerhouse here. That's what DAZN is. They are the powerhouse of boxing. So I'm excited and, you know, happy to be part of it.
To put a button on the Golovkin topic, how confident are you that 2020 we will see the fight? 100% confident? 90%? Can you put a number on it?
It all depends on Golovkin. It all depends on his performance. That's basically it. Look, if Golovkin, I can assure you, if Golovkin looks like an animal, he looks like a beast, and destroys the champion, the IBF champion.
Derevchenko.
Derevchenko. If he destroys him, then that'll open up Canelo's eyes and say, you know what? I think I want to fight him again. That's who Canelo is. He loves the challenges. He loves going there inside the ring against the best. So I don't know the percentage of if it can take place or not, but I'm hoping it does.
So Kovalev is a big challenge, despite his age and despite everything he's endured the last year or so.
Right.
You have experience moving up in weight classes.
I do.
You went to 160. Clearly not a comfortable weight class for you.
Right.
And it ended with the Hopkins fight getting stopped. What do you tell Canelo about what he's in for against bigger fighters?
Don't underestimate the height and the power. You know, he's not as fast as Canelo, and maybe Canelo's banking on his speed and his movement and maybe his body shots, but don't underestimate Kovalev's power. A fighter never loses his power. It doesn't matter if you're 50 years old inside that ring. You may lose your speed, you may lose your footwork, but your power is still there. So he just has to be careful. He has to be very disciplined the whole fight. Don't bank on just working on the body. You have to, yes, chop him down, but be careful with that power. Be careful with his stiff jab. He's not your ordinary, typical, you know, European type of fighter who just is very stiff and throws strong punches. Kovalev can move. Mm. He has movement. So and he has brains. He has smarts. I think that Canelo is in tough. I mean, Kovalev is obviously in tough, but Canelo is the one who has to prove that he can take that punch. So we'll see.
Would you encourage Canelo to go the full 175 to bulk up to a bigger weight than he ever has in his pro career?
Well, Canelo walks around at 190. Mm. He's a solid guy. I think, you know, when people talk about, you know, well, Canelo has to move up, it's actually the opposite. Canelo has to go down, and a lot of his opponents have to go up, even though they look bigger. Canelo's he's a short, stocky guy who has a neck the size of who knows what, a pit bull. You know, Canelo is the guy who has to lose weight here, and so he'll be good. He'll be fine. I think he's going to feel very comfortable. I've seen him spar in the gym with guys who are weighing 200 pounds and handling them with no problem. I don't know how he does it, but he does. So I think come fight night, when Kovalev is weighing about 185, 190 maybe, Canelo will be right there as well. Yeah, it's going to be a fun fight.
Going up in weight is one thing. Coming back down oftentimes has proven difficult for fighters in the past. Do you think we've seen the end of Canelo at 160?
I hope not. I hope not because, yes, you're right. It's difficult to come back down. I obviously proved it when I fought Manny Pacquiao trying to come down from 160. But I think Canelo is so disciplined. The fact that he's a real true athlete, meaning, look, this guy doesn't go out and party, doesn't smoke, doesn't drink. He takes care of himself. He's always training. It might be a bit, you know, easy for him to come back down from a higher weight class, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. It all depends. Maybe he wants to stay at 168. I haven't seen a fighter who's held belts in three different divisions at the same time simultaneously, so this might be the first year after he defeats Kovalev, who knows, but he'll have choices. He'll have choices to fight at 160, 168, 175. Who knows, maybe he'll surprise us and go up to cruiserweight. We'll see.
That would be a big jump to go up to 200 pounds.
It would be.
That's a lot. See you November 2nd in Las Vegas. Canelo Alvarez, Sergey Kovalev. Oscar, thank you.
Can't wait. Thank you.